Well, I guess, do you think we should start at 7:30? Well, I'll just call our meeting to order. I think I've had the chance to meet most of you. My name is Tom Berger, and this is a hearing of the Alaska Native Review Commission. I've been traveling around the people. Unless you get here early, there are no seats left in the back row. I was saying, whenever I go to a meeting, I always sit in the back row. I've been traveling around Alaska, holding meetings like this, to see what people living in the villages think about the land claim settlement of 1971. What difference ANCSA, the land claim settlement, has made here in Clukwan. What you people think about it, your opinions. I was asked to do this job by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, which is an international organization of Eskimos from Alaska, Canada, and Greenland. And the World Council of Indigenous People, which also sponsors this commission, represents Indian people in North and South America. And so they, at the request of Alaska Natives, said they would ask me to come here and to go around Alaska and to find out what Alaska Natives think about their land claim settlement. Your land claim settlement back in 1971 was regarded at the time as a landmark. Alaska Natives received $962.5 million and 44 million acres of land. And in many other countries, we all heard about it, and we decided you must all be millionaires by now. So a lot of people were interested in seeing how it all turned out. And that's why I've been holding these meetings. And I've been to 40 villages and towns, and more than 800 Alaska Natives have testified at these hearings. And they've been talking about the structure of ANCSA, of the land claim settlement. As you know, under the settlement, everybody got 100 shares in village corporation and 100 shares in the regional corporation, but the children born since that time, the children born since 1971, don't have the right to be enrolled as shareholders. I'd like to know how you feel about that. Then, of course, since the land that you got under the settlement is held by the corporations and the shares in the corporations can be sold after 1991, I'd like you to tell me how you feel about the question whether you should sell your shares. Should Alaska Natives have the right to sell their shares after 1991 and get some money for them and buy a car or get a new roof for their house or whatever they want to do with the money? Or bearing in mind that if enough people sell their shares, outsiders could take over Clukwan Inc. or Sea Alaska, and they'd wind up controlling the corporation and owning native lands. So some of these questions are pretty difficult ones. Then, of course, in the years following 1991, Native land, even if it is not developed, even if it's used for subsistence, can be taxed, and that's an important question, too. Then, come in, Mr. Hammond.
Hello.
Nice to see you. Well, we've been holding these meetings in all over the state. I've been traveling since the beginning of the year, and we've heard people express their views on these questions. And besides the land and the corporations and the shares, there is the question of sovereignty or native self-government, and I'd like to know how you feel about that, because, of course, it keeps coming up. Some people say we should pass laws that get Congress to pass laws that will prevent native corporations falling into non-native hands. They've said that's the best way to protect ourselves. Others have said, no, let's have the corporations transfer our land to the tribal governments. That'll be the best way to make sure the land stays in native hands. Other people have expressed still other views about maybe turning the land over to nonprofits or cooperatives or something else. So I want to hear your views on all of those questions. Some people have come here with me. Eileen McLean, who helps to organize meetings for our commission. She organized our meetings in Southeast Alaska when we were here in May, and she helped us to organize this meeting. And Eileen worked with our commission until August this year, when she left to run for the assembly in the North Slope Borough, and was elected earlier this month. So she doesn't need this commission anymore. I mean, she can. Anyway, I'm glad she's here. Jim Sykes is with me, too. He is the sound man. He's taking down everything that is said on tape, and then it will be typed up, and we will send a transcript back to Klukwan of everything that is said tonight, so you'll have a permanent record of what is said. I want that permanent record of what people are saying, so that my report, because I intend to write a report about this, will be based on what people have told me at these meetings. And I will be writing a report after I've finished my travels. I'll be finished the meetings in the regions early in the new year, and then I'll write a report, and it'll be based on what you've told me, and I'll set out how you feel about the land claim settlement and what you want to do about the future. And I'll make my own recommendations for you. And because people from other countries, Native people, are concerned about what's happening in Alaska, some of them have come to Anchorage to testify at hearings we've held there, and they've talked about their land claim settlements. We've learned from them, and they've learned from the Alaskan experience. In my report, I'll also give some advice to Native people in other countries and to their governments. In my report, I'm not appointed by the federal government or the state government. I've been appointed by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference and the World Council of Indigenous People, and my report will go to those organizations, and they'll submit it to the United Nations. But I'll also send copies to everybody who testifies at these hearings, so that it will be freely available in Alaska, and I hope it will make a constructive contribution to helping to sort out these questions. Well, the only other thing I want to say is that I and those who traveled with me want to thank you for the very nice supper that we had tonight. It was delicious, and I just want to thank the folks who put it all together for us. We really enjoyed it. So, that's all I've got to say. We're open for business, and if you wouldn't mind coming forward to this microphone to speak, just so that what you say goes into this wire and goes there along the floor and into his earphones. And if you would, that would be fine. Ready to start. Yes, sir.
I'd like to say welcome to you for coming up here. We have been pretty busy as council. We've just been voted in as a new council, and we've been pretty busy and trying to get ourselves squared away. among other things, we heard about your coming here. And I know that the members of the new council are busy meeting elsewhere. But I did want to say thank you to your people for coming. Also, I have been seeing and reading about your commission, and I know you've heard about this many times. What about our, like you mentioned, young people who are born after 71? I have a granddaughter who is 10 years old, and as of today, she does not belong anywhere. She's not the last member, she is not teenage, or any other place. What do we do with them? Also, although she is going to receive my share upon my death, but that is a long time for some of them to wait. I do not say that for myself. I know there are others who feel concerned about this, and in your different meetings, you must have heard this kind of talk, and maybe someone had an answer to this problem, because in a TV report, I heard someone say, by the year 1991, there will be 40,000 Indians born since 71, and they will be nowhere. So there must have been someone came up with an idea as to what to do with these people in the end. Also, I have some other questions, but this is the one that I was mainly concerned with. Did in your travels or meetings find any way that there can be a solution to this problem?
Well, sir, in every village and town we've been to, people have said, as you have just said, why were the children left out of this settlement? What kind of a settlement is that? And quite a few proposals have been made about how that might be fixed up. One of the ideas is that in 1991, shares would be issued to all of those children. And as you say, some of them will be 20 years old then, and there will be about 40,000 of them. That's one possibility. See, that is, the corporations could issue shares to all of those children. Another possibility that's been raised is to have the corporations transfer the land to the IRA councils, and if they then hold the land, of course, they just pass it on from one generation to the next. Everybody who's born into the tribe automatically acquires an equal interest in the land that is held by the tribe. So that's one other idea. We're going to be holding some roundtable discussions in Anchorage in November and December to try to come up with some solutions. I'm sure there's a solution, and a number of proposals have been made. I just want to make sure that we examine them very closely to see which is the best idea. And certainly everybody feels, or just about everybody, feels the way you do.
Thank you.
Oh, my name is Charles King, Sr.
Did you want to add anything, Mr. King?
Maybe someone else.
Okay. Yes, please.
My name is Elsie Hughes.
Would you like to step over here, Ms. Hughes, if you don't mind? Then you can be seated.
Why not questions? I was born in Kills New, Alaska,
And I left Alaska for about 16 years. And during that time, I didn't know what was going on. Lack of communication. My relatives wouldn't tell me anything. And I feel like Charlie Keene's granddaughter. I don't have a place to go, no land, no just. I did go back to Angoon, and I stayed there for about 3 months, and they just, I didn't have a place to put a house, a smokehouse, a tent, or anything. It seemed like they just wanted me to get out of there. I didn't belong there anymore, although I was born there. And
you weren't enrolled in any of the corporations then in 1971?
No, I was never notified about any enrollment anywhere. How did we get enrolled in Sea Alaska? Somebody.
You were enrolled in Sea Alaska?
Yeah.
Yeah. We were originally in the 13th, and then they gave us an option to get out of the 13th into another corporation, so we got out of the 13th and went into the 12th. However, our son stayed in the 13th, and both of us went into the 12th. But we do not belong to another corporation as a lot of other people got. Like almost everybody else in the family got Gold Belt. We didn't even know about it or didn't even hear about it until after the roads were all closed. We tried to go back to find out and run against the door. They say the roads were closed and that's it. We don't know you anymore.
Well, I suppose if ANCSA has opened up, there is a possibility. And certainly if enrollment is opened up for the children born since 1971, it may be that the roles could be opened up for people who were never enrolled in any village in the old days, but no one can be sure about that. Where did you come from? That is, before you left Alaska for 16 years. You told me, but I didn't
know. Florence, Oregon.
No, but you were in Alaska before you went to Oregon.
Juneau. I was born in Killisnoo on the island.
Oh.
And my father is from here. That's why I'm here.
Right.
Here
before we well, anything else that you'd like to bring up?
That was my question. He helped me a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Do I have to state your name?
No, please.
My name is Marvin Willard, and I have some questions on people that are talking about enrolling people. Children that born after 71. Okay, supposing somebody like, for instance, Frank Hughes, he was in 13, transferred over to 12, now he's living in Tlaquan, and now they had children here, would their children be eligible to be shareholders of Tlaquan Inc., or would they have to refer back to shareholders in number 12? Or for instance, somebody here from Tlaquan moves up here and becomes a resident up here, has children here, and would the children be eligible for Tlaquan, or would the children of that family, seeing that they were originally from Tlaquan, have to refer their children back to Tlaquan Corporation?
Gosh, you had us moving around the map so fast there.
No.
Okay. Threw me off a little earlier.
If somebody, say somebody came moved from Tlaquan up here, from Tlaquan Hina Corporation, they moved to Tlaquan, and while they were living here became residents, and they had children here, and they decided to pass that law. Any child born after 1971 would be eligible to enroll in a corporation, one of the corporations, village corporations. Would that child, seeing that the parent is now a resident of Tlaquan, be eligible to enroll in Tlaquan, or would they have to refer back to their original Tlaquan Hina?
Well, that depends on what. What was allowed when the roles were opened up for children to be enrolled, but you've raised a problem. Where should they go? if their parents had moved to the place where they were born or to the place where they're living now. Mm-hmm. That's a question that would face Congress if they were to open up the rolls. But in the first instance, it's a question that faces Alaska Natives. If they decide they want to recommend opening up the rolls, they'd have to think about the kind of question you've raised. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
That's wild. I just wanted people.
No, but which do you think they should be enrolled at?
I think they should be enrolled in where they originally first.
Where their parents
enrolled,
came from?
Yeah.
And where their parents were first enrolled?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's one deal.
Yes. Tom, could you speak a little closer to the mic and everybody else could hear these mics?
Okay. Some people are thinking ahead, obviously.
Pages. My name is Lonnie Stronghatch. I'm from Klukwan. I was born here. I haven't lived here all my life, but for the last 10 years I have. And I've seen how other people live in other places. I've traveled around. And I'm happy to say that I'd rather live no place else than in Klukwan. That's my home, and I like our lifestyle here. It's important to me that this lifestyle can continue. One thing about the Land Claims Act I'd like to speak on is how it has affected our lifestyle. And I can see, like, in the past history of Native American peoples where legislation has been passed supposedly in the best interest of the Native Americans, but it's always turned around, and I can see how that legislation has inflicted changes in the lifestyle of American people, and I can see that this Land Claims Act has done the same for our people up here. And I'm concerned especially about the subsistence lifestyle. And I'm upset that this issue was not raised as a major issue when the Land Claims Act was being discussed, because that's our life. The subsistence lifestyle is how our people lived, and it wasn't an issue when the Land Claims Act. I mean, everybody saw land and money. That was the major issue, but now that the act has been passed, I mean, sure, we got 23,000 acres in our village corporation, but that's down there in near Ketchikan. That's not our home country. That upsets me. But the thing that most upsets me is that the grandfather rights, the Aboriginal rights of hunting and fishing, were extinguished when the Land Claims Act was passed. And now we have to rely on the state governments and these fish and game boards and all the things that they pass every year. I mean, I get frightened that we will not be able to continue fishing from our river here. What's going to happen if they decide the natives don't need that fish, they can buy hamburger from the store or something? I mean, that frightens me, because they can do that. And who's to say they won't do it? I mean, they've passed laws year after year, you know, inflicting changes on Native people. And I can see where that can occur. I'm not saying that they'll go right out and do that, but I'm concerned that might take place. And another thing that I'm concerned about is the sovereignty issue. And I know this was brought up last year at the United Tribes Conference. I was there, but I know that a lot of people were raising the issue there and were concerned that the federal government would not recognize their sovereignty, and they wanted either the state or federal government to pass a law that would give the Native people their sovereignty. Well, I don't see it like that, because the Land Claims Act did not address the issue of sovereignty at all. And I feel like we've never negotiated that right away. And I feel like any sovereignty that we had before all the non-Natives got here, we still have it. And I feel like as Native leaders and the people that instituted this study that you're doing now, I think that we should all look at this issue of sovereignty and not wait for the federal government to recognize it. I mean, how are they going to recognize sovereignty if we don't act like sovereigns ourselves? And I feel like as Native leaders, we should start acting like sovereignty. Why wait until legislatures, I mean, state and federal government, start passing laws that are going to inflict changes on us? I think that we should start acting like sovereigns. I think we should look at our concerns, start passing laws that we want to see. I mean, protecting our interests, like fishing. Why can't we pass our own laws here in this village to protect our subsistence lifestyle? Why should we wait for the State Fish and Game Board to pass some subsistence law, ensuring our rights to fish? I feel like we as sovereigns can do that. And I feel like the leaders should start acting like that. If we want people to recognize us as sovereigns, we have to start looking like sovereigns. And nobody else can do it for us. We as Native people have to do that on our own. And I am concerned about the other issue that people have brought up about the children. I have two children, and maybe we'll have some more, I don't know. But right now, I mean, they aren't considered Native even, I mean, as far as the Land Claims Act is passed. They're just like anybody else on the street that, I mean, like living in Haines or something. They aren't recognized as shareholders, and I'm concerned that, you know, what's going to happen to them, because, you know, after this generation passes, who's going to be the Native shareholders? And so I feel like that should be opened up. And what I mentioned earlier about the corporation, Klekwan Inc. corporate land, is being held down there in Long Island outside of Ketchikan. I didn't think it was right that we would go down into that area and claim land, and it created some hard feelings. And even now, our shareholders that work down there are given a bad time from people like out of Heidelberg and stuff, where they resent the Klekwan guys working down there. And I feel like we were set up for something like that, being forced out of this area where our traditional lands were, because I don't know what the whole deal is. I wasn't, you know, that old when 1971 was around when they were doing all this stuff, but I feel like if we could have selected land around here, we would have been better off. I mean, and that being, caused having that conflict with other Native groups. So if that could be changed, where, you know, I guess what happened was the state had already claimed lands around here, and so it wasn't open for Klekwan Inc. to claim that 23,000 acres that was allowed for them, but yeah, I can't remember everything I wanted to discuss. I was thinking on the issue of 1991, when the stock will become, you can trade or sell it or whatever. I don't think that our people are ready for that, because you see, most corporations, from the way I understand it and the things that I've read, You know, they're family corporations, and people have been raised, you know, generation after generation to run the corporations. And here, you know, our people have just gotten into it, you know, in the last 15 years, and we weren't raised up to run corporations, and, you know, we're raised up to catch fish and, you know, smoke and enjoy it and, you know, do all those kinds of things, but we weren't brought up to run corporations. And I feel like, you know, 1991, it's like casting sheep into a lion's den. I mean, because we're going to have to compete with these people that have been, you know, geared towards it. And I think we're really at a disadvantage. And if anything can be done to extend that 1991 deadline, that I think that measures should be taken, whatever we can do to extend that deadline, because I don't feel like we're ready for it. I know we've come a long way in the last 15 years, but I still feel like we're not ready to compete. So that's all I'd like to say at this time.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Name's Ed Warren. I feel compelled I should follow Lonnie because she covers areas where I'm elected to be responsible for. And I believe her statement that we're not ready is fairly accurate. If you stop to reflect, some studies by social scientists not too long ago, but a generation ago. I do not recall the author, but it takes 40 years. In essence, he was saying, it takes 40 years for a family to become disciplined in the business they're in. If the family's in the as a lawyer, a family of lawyers takes 40 years to be productive, to be creative. It takes a businessman 40 years to be disciplined. And we got 20 years. There's when you have become aware of these limitations, you're up against extreme time frame requirements, entirely in a different values of culture values. Where it's my opinion as a board member of Clockwan Inc. that the ANSCA laws and an implementation of the laws can be no less important than the matters that the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants are concerned with. The Federal Accounting Review Board, they are concerned in matters of business. Why am I talking about business? Well, I understand ANSCA is to provide us an opportunity to take part in business. But the makeup of ANSCA laws were brought about by one or two committees working, one subcommittee and a main committee. Recommendations were made to Congress, and these became laws, according to Professor Monroe Price, his research printed back in 75 and 76 from UCLA. When we compare the process that the non-native has to go through to control business, it's very lengthy. The many years and many specialists run and evaluate whether certain standards are accepted or not. Not so with ANSCOM. Just thrown together, and for example, the perhaps the most critical one for us natives is village corporations, is the Section 14F, Mineral Developments and Village Consent. What it essentially is saying that the under ANSCA, the regional corporations have subsurface rights, and the village corporations have surface rights of them. Now, when you stop to think about planning operations for a village corporation over a period of 5 or 6 years, you have to think about some of the problems that may occur that may prevent your, may impact your final goal. And I believe our final goal in Klukwan is to meet the economic needs of our shareholders and address the employment skills, encourage employment careers, and we're all, there are so many diversified ambitions among us that it's going to take a few more years to make enough inroads to so we can all work a little more closely. Right now, we have less than 20% of our workforce is shareholders, and very discouraging factor to look at.
Timber on Long Island?
And this includes timber, longshore, and investments. And the when we stop to look at some of the problems that we are addressing, they look like short-term items, like training somebody. To the non-native, it will probably feel like, well, it only takes one generation to one person to go through high school and get into electronic field. Well, on the surface, it is simple. But I think some of us realize that some of the restrictions we got that we are in have been built in sometime before we were even born, some of them. For example, in 1958, the state of Alaska became a state. The Congress gave statehood to Alaska in 1958, sometime in June, I think it was. But in August 28th, in the same year, Alaska requested to have its state government to exercise criminal and civil jurisdiction over Indian land. Only five in the country, only five states in the country, according to the Indian Law Review, only five states in the country requested this. Now, look at it. It's a 45 days after it makes statehood, it then requested and received this kind of jurisdiction. Now, what does this mean to ANSCA? Surely ANSCA does not address political and governmental powers, but how does this compare when you look at it, this law? I guess it's called the Public Law 280, and it's amended to be 615. The amendment was to bring about Indian consent. So it gets a little more confusing, and the whole point of my talking about this is our regulations in governing our whole outlook is getting really overloaded with all kinds of requirements, and people like myself and the corporate board have to look at it, what's our environment, what have we got, what resources do we have to accomplish what ANSCA has required of us. It's not enough that the ANSCA Corporation have to make a dollar, the bottom line. It has to address the social issues, the shareholders' needs. It has to address the property in business. It's called the non-depreciable assets. In other words, it's always appreciating. It's a subject of all governments to tax, to make money, to make revenues from. But we still have to address these problems with our limitations. So there are a lot of shortcomings which hopefully this kind of a hearing will burn them out. My reaction to this commission hearing is that it's going to identify our common denominators. It's going to identify the need of our continuity of living, for example, our afterborn, people born after 71. There is no continuity of our relationship with those who are born before 71 and those who are born after. So it's creating a different society in which, right within our own one individual family, and I think those who already have children like I have, it's a trauma, and that's really an understatement because no way can these young children realize that the reason why they're not being a shareholder is that that some legislation took place in the Congress to do that. So so what to keep my self off the soapbox, so to speak, and give somebody else a talk, I guess I'll kind of. So what are my recommendations? The afterborn issue, the argument I've heard that is perhaps most prevalent is that it's going to dilute the value of the shares. But the more you learn about business, how shares are created and what the purpose of a share is on the market, the utility of stocks and shares, it really holds no water because a lot of companies will split their stocks or their shares to raise funds. So to argue that it will devalue your one's shares isn't it really correct. To include the newborn is after 1971 is really a right. That was a right that has been an oversight by Congress, and it should be addressed collectively and individually, and also by the corporations. The issue of the land is probably could be one of our final battles. While the board members are bogged down with ANSCA law, ANILCA laws, business laws, and security laws, we realize that the non-native is already busy making other laws or amending laws that we just are learning about. So if we do not learn to use what we already have, we're going to be further and further behind. Now, what am I saying when I say learn to use what we already have? Klokwanik, for example, paid almost $8 million in wages in 1982. Sealaska paid $37 million.